Okay, so today we're going to talk about Ethiopian jewelry, and actually, this is a, I guess this is a about controversies in the modern state of Israel, and this is actually a very timely topic because yesterday, an article came out in the Jewish News Syndicate discussing the plight of Ethiopian Jews. It stated in the article that 930 new Ethiopian Olim came to Israel in 2020. Many of whom were left behind after Operation Solomon in 1991, and they have been waiting for decades to move to Israel and reunite with their families. And this article that came out yesterday states that today there are approximately 13,000 Jews that currently reside in basically two areas in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa and in Gondar, with the northern part of the country. Plus the capital, Addis Ababa, and they're waiting to be taken to Israel. And of this group, some 8,000 Falash Mura, a Jew, this is a Jewish Ethiopian community whose ancestors converted to Christianity under pressure in the early 1900s, are waiting to make Aliyah. And their immigration was approved in 2015 by the government and followed in a few years later as well. But then, apparently, there were reports that said that they remain faithful to Christianity and they should not be entitled to immigrate under the law of return. So what I want to do is I want to study the history of this particular community, commonly called Beta Israel, and see how their history relates to some of the current issues relating to the Ethiopian community. Some of the material was I took from a shiur that I gave that was more focused on halacha about 3 years ago. This is more of a historical sort of analysis, which there is some obviously halacha sprinkled in. So we begin our journey in the 9th century. It could begin earlier, but we'll begin it in the 9th century. There is a traveler named Eldad Hadani, Eldad from Dan. He comes to Kairouan in North Africa, and he creates a big stir in the Jewish world. He claims, if you read here, that he writes about, he claims to be a member of an isolated Jewish community in Ethiopia that traces its lineage back to the tribe of Dan. And this is just from his book, Eldad Hadani. The tribe of Dan dedicated themselves to battle Yerovam. Yerovam was the first king of Malchus Yisrael during the reign of Rechavam, who was the king of Malchus Yisrael, of Malchus Yehuda. He was the son of Shlomo. So during his reign, Yerovam rebels, and during this time, apparently, this tribe followed Yerovam. God saw their intent was good, and he saved them from bloodshed. The entire tribe of Dan announced, "Flee, sons of Dan, and leave Israel and go to Egypt." But their leaders took counsel and said, "But the Torah of Moshe says you shall not return this way again." Right? There's a prohibition to go to Egypt. But how shall we descend to Egypt? And God gave them a good spirit, and the Danites ascended to Nahal Kishon and traveled by camel and camp until they reached Ethiopia. They found a good and rich land, a spacious land, a land of gardens and orchards and fields and vineyards, and the Ethiopians would not let them live with them until they made a covenant with them, for they feared them. And the Ethiopians paid tribute to the Danites. Apparently, they were probably a pretty mighty tribe. And he traces their beginnings from already the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. Rav Tzemach Gaon wrote a responsum in which he seemed to accept the claim of Eldad. There is an article from Tradition Magazine by a professor, Don Seaman, where he writes the following. This is in source two. He said, "Eldad describes an independent Jewish kingdom in the mountains of Ethiopia whose customs resemble both Rabbinite and Karaite usage and who lack the Talmud." So, right, if they came, if it's true, as they say, that they came in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, obviously there was a break in the Mesorah, no Mishnah, no Gemara, that results in their tradition. So, obviously, their halachos would probably sharply differ potentially from the rest of the Jewish world at that time. And he goes on to say, "The report of unfamiliar halachos aroused the sages of Kairouan to question Eldad's authenticity, but Rav Tzemach Gaon of Sura defended the book, pointing out that before the close of the Talmudic period, individual rabbis' rulings often differed from those which would become normative at a later date. So, okay, if even if there are significant differences in the Gemara, there are many differences, and we study both opinions. Even at the end of the day, we follow one opinion. Subsequent Jewish travelers, such as Benjamin of Tudela in the 12th century, continued referring to independent Jews in the land of Cush, as did the acclaimed letters of Prester John, written by a Christian. So, by the way, Prester John was a legendary Christian king, and there are stories of a Christian king who was said to rule over a Christian nation lost amid the pagans and Muslims in the Orient. So it's similar to that. In any case, the Ibn Ezra, in his commentary from last week's Parsha, he talks about how he writes about Sipora, and he writes, Asher Kasu, this is in source 3, Asher Kasu B'divrei Hayabim, De Moshe Al Tabed. He says, if that Zipporah was an Isha Kushit, he says that she was an Isha Kushit, but he says, don't trust what's recorded in the Book of Chronicles. There's some Book of Chronicles that he's referring to that's not relevant for our perspective, but he says, V'kal Omer Lecha Kol Sefer Shlo Katvu Nevim O Chachamim Pi HaKabbalah Ein Li Smoch Alav, any book that was not written by the prophets or the sages based on a tradition, it's not reliable. And may contain items which contradict the accurate information. And he cites a bunch of these books that apparently were prevalent in this time. And one of them is what? Sefer Eldad Hadadi. So he was not a big fan. And so obviously this book was subject to different opinions. And the truth is, there are other theories that have been proposed regarding the history of Ethiopian Jewry. For example, there is a legend known among Ethiopian Jewry relates that the marriage of Shlomo HaMelech and the Queen of Sheba, Malchus Sheva, produced a son named Menelik. And when the Queen of Sheba returns to her country with the boy, the king decides to send the firstborn sons of Israel to accompany her. When they arrive there, her escorts decide to remain there. According to this legend, the Ethiopian Jews are indeed Jews. So this actually would predate what Eldad Hadadi mentioned. There's another theory that the Ethiopian Jews are descendants of Jews who emigrated from Egypt from the 7th century BCE. It's about a little bit, probably about 100 years before the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash. The Ethiopian Jews and are descended from Jews who emigrated from southern Arabia between the 2nd century CE and the war between an Ethiopian Christian king and a Yemenite Christian king, a convert to Judaism in the 6th century CE. Another theory is that Jews had several periods of immigration and did not arrive there all at once, that Jews there mainly came from Egypt and were mainly joined by their brothers who came from the West. And over time, these Jews intermingled with the locals. And there's a theory that the North... Okay, so you have sort of different theories. And what's also perhaps related to this question is so let's assume they come from the tribe of Dan, or they're one of these like lost tribes. So there's an interesting theological question, which is, do we believe that the lost tribes are going to be found again? Do we believe the lost tribes are coming back at the end of time? So the lost tribes, so we know from, say, from Malachim, Beis, Perek, Yud Zayin, that the king of Ashur came and he essentially exiled Malchai Yisrael to Ashur, and he engaged in population exchange, and then he moved the people, foreigners, to live in Eretz Yisrael in the Northern Kingdom. And the subject of these, the Jewish status of these people, was a little debated in days in Chazal. There's a major debate whether these people called Kutim, whether they were bona fide converts or not, but in any case, they're exiled in Malachim Beis, and the Torah tells us that in the future, in Devarim, Perek Lam and Pasuk Beis and Gimel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shavta Hashem Elkecha v'sham Hashem Elkecha shivuscha v'rechamecha, Hashem will bring back your captives v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim. We believe in the future there will be a kibbutz galios, all the tribes, everyone will return, and indeed, the Sefer Yeshayahu describes that people will return from Ashur, from Mitzrayim. And one of the places in Sefer Yeshayahu, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis, it says that people are going to return from Cush, from Ethiopia. So this is great. That this may indicate, maybe, that the that there's some biblical reference to the fact that at some point in the future, Jews may live in Cush. But the truth is, there actually is a debate between, interesting debate, just to keep, just for knowledge, between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva believes, this is in the Mishnah Sanhedrin, Perek Yud, Pasuk Gimel, there's a debate as to how to understand the Psukim. According to Rabbi Akiva, the 10 tribes are not returning. And that, so that's Rabbi Akiva's view, and Rabbi Eliezer thinks that they are returning. That's a dispute, and that may also have, you know, that may also have implications for whether you believe that that, you know, you see people and they say they're from the certain tribe. You know, what do we theologically believe about that? So there was a you should know there was a dispute about that between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. But that being said, in 1488, Rav Ovadia of Bartanura travels from Italy to Eretz Yisrael. On the way, he meets two Ethiopian Jews, whom he describes as follows, and I quote, "I saw two of them, almost black, but not like the Cushites, and I could not tell what they were or whether they observed the Karaite law. They said they were related to the tribe of Dan. They said most of the pepper and spices that the Cushites sell come from their land. I saw this with my own eyes and heard it with my own ears. However, the two men did not know the holy language, only a tiny bit, and their Arabic was barely comprehensible to the residents of Eretz Yisrael." So you have, this is just one example. There are indications throughout Jewish history of individuals, you know, seeing. Trying to full screen this. Sorry. One second. Oh, here it is. Okay. There are indications of different individuals saying that I came across these people who were Ethiopians here and there. Ethiopian Jews. The first major responsa dealing with the Jewishness of this community takes place in the 16th century by the Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra. He was a rabbi in Cairo for the most of his life. And there are actually two fascinating responsa. So one responsa dealt with the following. There was an Egyptian Jew who purchased an Ethiopian servant on the Cairo slave market. And the Ethiopian claim to be an Israelite. So the question was, do you have to set him free? Why? Because maybe he's an Eved Ivri. Okay? The Radvaz, you think you learn about these biblical laws of Eved Ivri and you're like, you know, is it relevant? So they actually were discussing this issue. And does it apply? And so the Radvaz, by the way, says that it does not apply to captives of war. He said the situation is an obligation upon the entire Jewish community should redeem. And he affirms the Jewishness of the Ethiopian, and he's concerned. Maybe there are two different issues. First of all, number one is this person Jewish? And secondly, if he's Jewish, is he potentially a mamzer? Why am I saying is he a mamzer? Because let's say that the Jews from Ethiopia, let's say they have different rules about how you divorce a woman. And let's say that I'm a rabbi and I'm a halachic authority, and I believe that what they've been doing for all these years about the process for divorcing, that their process for divorcing is not valid, then you may have had major situations where people thought they got divorced, according to halacha, they did not get divorced, and then they remarried, and that was considered an adulterous relationship. And then the children are Babzeri. So you had to deal with both those issues. And the Radvaz basically comes to the conclusion that, number one is he thinks they are Jewish. And number two, he actually thinks that they're not Mamzerim, because probably it could be that the weddings themselves may not have been according to halacha. So if the wedding, so maybe the divorce wasn't according to halacha, but the wedding may not have been according to halacha, and you're only a mamzer if what? If the wedding is according to halacha, and the divorce is not according to halacha. So let's just read just two passages here from the Radvaz, how he views the Jews here. This is in source 8. The Radvaz, Chelek Zayin, Siman Hey, he says, Elu aboy me'eretz kush, hey mi shevet dam, b'li safek. So the Radvaz, or David Ibn Zimra in the 16th century, says that these Jews who come from the land of Kush, from Ethiopia, they are from the tribe of Dan, without any doubt. They didn't have among them sages learned in the tradition, so they seized upon the literal meaning of the Torah verses. However, if they had been taught, they would not have rejected the words of our rabbis. They're like a child raised among idolaters. In other words, they're not to be blamed for the fact that they may not follow, say, the correct halacha, as the Radvaz understands it, because they don't know any better. But he doesn't doubt their Judaism whatsoever. And in another tshuva relating to this, in Chelek Zayim Siva Tes, the Radvaz says the following, De'la'olam yesh melchama bein malchei kush yesh lehem shlosha malchios. He says, the matter is well known. There's a perpetual war between the kings of Cush, which has three kingdoms. Ksaso, Shayishmaelim, one part belongs to the Ishmaelites. Ksaso, Notrim, and one part belongs to the Christians. Ksaso, Israelim, and one part belongs to the Israelites, Bishabat Dad, from the tribe of Dad. So there are three kingdoms. One's Muslim, one's Christian, one's Jewish. Ukhfi Adira, Haim, Mikas Tzadok Ubaito, Sadikram Karoi. And in all likelihood, they're from the sect of Tzadok and Baitos, who are called Karaites. Sherei Einam Yodim Elaktsas Mitzvos, they only know some Mitzvos. Einam Yodim Torah Shabbat Peh, and they don't know Torah Shabbat Peh. Vein Madlikin Neros B'Shabbos, they don't light candles on Shabbos. Lo Tishpos HaMelchom B'nehem, and they war doesn't cease between them. When he says they're from Tzadok and Baitos, and they're now Karaites, Tzadok and Baitos are very different than the Karaites. Tzadok and Baitos were Tzidukim, were individuals who lived in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, and what he's simply saying is that they're Jews, but they may not follow the currently accepted traditions. So those who didn't follow the currently accepted traditions in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash were Tzidukim by Tosin. The Karaites were individuals during the era of the Godim from the 7th, 11th century, and a little bit afterwards, and even afterwards, but they started, the Karaite movement begins in the era of the Gaonim, and they're also people who didn't follow the traditional approaches. So he says we treat them like them. They're 100%. They are 100% Jewish. By the way, this second case of the Radvaz, which is what this this Chelek Zayin Siman Tes source is about, was where there was a woman who was taken as a slave from Africa to Europe. She claimed that her husband was massacred and she was purchased by a Jew, and the two of them had a child together. And in this response, I said they are Jewish. And again, there's no issue of mamzerus, as I mentioned, because the wedding was probably not done with kosher witnesses. And here he compares them, what we just read, to Karaites, because they don't observe Torah Shabbat Peh according to our methods. And the Karaites' witnesses are not considered kosher witnesses. And again, but the point here is, he assumes that they are Jewish. And again, in the same response, he concludes that if the Ethiopian Jewish community wished to return to Rabbinic Judaism, they would be received and they would be welcomed to the fold, just as the Karaites were welcomed into the fold in the time of Rabbi Avraham ben Harambam. It should be noted that just because the Radvaz, okay, it should be noted that just because the Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, in the 16th century, claimed them to be Jewish, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are Jewish in the 20th century, because maybe they intermarried or accepted Gentile converts between the time of the Radvaz until today, and then the question is to what degree. Again, I'm not saying yes or no, one way or the other. In other words, you would have to establish that even if you would say that the Radvaz did his research and he was 100% correct, you would also have to try to ascertain whether they assimilate between then and now. I know, for example, that just because we had this in our shul a number of years back, that we we hired some, I think, babysitters for the Yom Narayim. And obviously for the Yom Narayim, they would be driving here and they would be doing some malacha on their own. Let's say they would be writing down things, whatever the case was that we felt was permitted. But apparently one of them had a conversation, I think, with Daniel Strook and said, oh yeah, it's really nice, your Jewish traditions. You know, my grandmother, she lights two candles Friday night. I'm like, oh, okay. So the question was, well, are we going to hire this person back for Yom Kippur? And I think this person had origins from the conversos, you know, from Spain. And so I remember I asked the Shaila, and the response I got was that even if they had that tradition, the presumption is that they probably intermarried, and there was no strong tradition that they kept to their own community, and you can assume that they were not Jewish at the time. Again, my point being simply is that even if the Radvaz is 100% correct, that they are, there's enough evidence to say that they're Jewish, you also need to clarify that that is the case, between the 16th century and modern times. Now, between the 16th century and the 19th century, there's little contact between Beta Israel, they're called Beta Israel, B-E-T-A Israel, this Ethiopian community and the Jewish community outside Ethiopia until the latter half of the 19th century. You know, there's a story of an Abba Mahari in 1862. Apparently, he was born into the Beta Israel community in the early 19th century, and he became a monk first, and he lived a life of isolation in which he wandered from village to village, teaching, but he taught Torah to Jews. And his message was based on the principles of Messianism and Zionism. And actually, his goal was to make Aliyah, to Israel and ending the diaspora. The Jews, he wanted to finish the, you know, move all, have all the Ethiopians move to Israel. And he was connected to the Jews and the mission of the Jews. And probably one of the reasons was there was this major civil war taking place. And he was influenced by the emperor at the time who valued the Jews. And the Ethiopian emperor aspired to conquer Jerusalem from the Muslims. He is known for declaring Jerusalem is the wife and Ethiopia is the husband. Now this Abba Mahari said that God revealed himself to Abba Mahari in a dream and said that the time for redemption has arrived. You must lead the Jews to the land of Israel. And the story goes that he gathers thousands of Beta Israel. He tells them about his vision, and they followed him to the Red Sea. And you know what's going to happen next, right? He wants it to part. And he said that God must be testing them. And again, and God is with them, and the sea will part. And what does he do? You guessed it. He raises his staff over the water, but it did not divide. And then, again, I don't know if he's aware of the Medrash of Nachshon ben Aminadav, but he enters the sea first, followed by thousands who believed that God would part the water. Unfortunately, many drowned, and many returned to Ethiopia. However, this myth inspired many 120 years later to leave their villages and march to Israel. The London Society for the Promotion of Christianity Amongst the Jews had begun in the early 1860s to launch an effort to proselytize the Beta Israel. The Beta Israel members who were converted to Christianity are known today as Falash Mura. Falash means the horse of the raven. The horse refers to the converts, and the raven refers to the missionary Martin Flad, who used to wear black clothes. In response, some Jews traveled to Ethiopia with an effort to reunify Beta Israel with world Jewry. And this is a passage from Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, who was a leading German rabbi in the 19th century. And he writes the following. He says, for several years, a most melancholy account has made tremble the heart of every Jew who feels for the weal of his nation. It is the sad news that 250,000 of our believers live in Abyssinia, who have lost during their long exile the knowledge of Jewish doctrines and only manifest their noble extraction by the sacred volume which they have preserved as a precious good, and by the observance of the Sabbaths and the holidays. That these hundreds of thousands who are dispersed among other people, separated from those who profess the same faith, certainly have the strongest claim possible on our sympathies, cannot be denied. And I believe that all my fellow believers whose hearts still beat warmly for our faith, will feel with me the profound grief which must possess the hearts of all Jews, wherever they live and to whatever party they may belong. It is the duty of the whole of Judaism to grant assistance to our poor brethren who are exposed to the imminent danger of being swallowed up in the abyss, not only of religious, but also of moral corruption. We must exert ourselves to prove the oneness of all of Israel. Again, so he obviously is in favor of proselytizing to the Jews. There is a letter here, which is probably too small to read, but this is from HaRabbanut HaRashit LaEretz Yisrael. It's written by Rav Yaakov Meir and Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook, who were leading rabbis of Eretz Yisrael. At the end of the letter, it says, Hatzilu na es achenu hafalashim mikilyan umit miah, itzru na lahashiv eilenu at ha'achim hanidachim ha'ela v'lo yimacheh shemam Yisrael mitachat shmei Hashem, which means, fellow Jews, save our brothers, the falashas, from extinction and assimilation. Help bring back these exiled brothers. No tribe of Israel shall be wiped out from under God's heavens. And then, that's Rav Kook feels very strongly about returning them to Medinat Yisrael as part of our messianic plan. Now, after the establishment of the state of Israel, there was an attempt to educate the Ethiopians in Ethiopia, Ethiopian Jews, with the goal of bringing this community to Israel. But for some reason, it stopped. And I just have a quote here. This is written by Meital Regev, from the policy of suspend to the policy of immigration, the Israeli policy towards Ethiopian Jews from 1948 to 1984. And she writes that beginning in 1948, discussions were held in a broad range of institutions in Israel regarding bringing Ethiopian Jews. In a report from the Division of Education and Torah Culture in the diaspora of the Jewish Agency in 1952, it was written explicitly that the tribe of Falashas are the most important Jewish tribe. Because of this, in 1953, the Zionist leadership began acting via the Jewish Agency to draw the Ethiopian community close to Israel on the one hand, and Rabbinic Judaism on the other. This was done by sending rabbinic emissaries to teach the community traditions and Orthodox law as practiced in Israel. In parallel, the Jewish Agency opened schools to teach Hebrew, Judaism, and general professions. In 1957, the Jewish Agency closed the schools and stopped sending emissaries to the community. Now, the question is why? And the answer is, it's because of the chief rabbi of Israel, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi Herzog. Most Western researchers in 1951 could not accept that Ethiopians were ethnically Jewish. All of their scientific evidence was to demonstrate that existed to conclude that they were Jewish was inconclusive. And the genetic makeup of Ethiopian Jews was actually more similar to other Africans than Jews. And it suggests that they are not Jewish. And again, let me just read you a small piece of his response. I only have it in Hebrew, so I will translate for you. This is in source 13, Eben Ezer, Aleph Simon Yud Gimel. It's a very long teshuva, very long response. He writes, Safek Shema HaBnei Yisrael Heim Tzetzai Gerim. So there are really two different possibilities. Maybe there are descendants of converts. Kabbalas, now he says, okay, so if they're descendants of converts, then what? Kabbalas Hager, Al Yudei Hillel, Kabbalas HaMitzvos Begerus. So you can convert, but it has to be with Kabbalas HaMitzvos. V'inei yesh li stapek im eila b'nei Yisrael heim tzetzoei gerim o heim mizera beis Yisrael. So are they descendants of converts? But they clearly have certain Jewish practices. In other words, was it at some time that maybe a bunch of people, moved there or whatever, a bunch of people were exposed to Jews and then they accepted their traditions or they decided they like Jewish practice, so a bunch of people converted. Is that it? Or do they actually come from, let's say, Sheva Dan? Do they actually come, from lineage, maternal lineage, all the way back to the Bnei Yisrael? Im katzad harishon, if it's like the first side, that they come from converts, yesh lo lahatil safek be'etzem hagerus. So you have to question, was the conversion legitimate? They didn't accept basic halachos of nida, gittin, chalitza. A lot of these halachos are very explicit and very more explained and elaborated. You know, in the rules are in the Torah Sheval Peh, which obviously they didn't accept. Actually, stopping ma'isa geres lechatchila kalacha. If what they accepted is not really what we call Judaism or Jewish halacha, they accepted certain things, is that enough to consider them Jewish? Would their acceptance be an acceptance of mitzvos? V'hine im anu motzim afilu kila shlema chas v'sham shel Yisrael sheparku maleim ol Torah mitzvos. So even if we find an entire community that stopped observing Torah and mitzvos, efshe shavosem ha'yu shomer Torah mitzvos, maybe their ancestors were observant. But here, we don't know, even from now, was there even one generation where everyone accepted Torah mitzvos? But let's say you have descendants of converts that before they converted, it was known that they were non-Jews. Imanu motzim sheish mitzvos shelorach shirafuus biyadim shover malem b'derech avrayonim shehu or ela shehu miyusad atzlam shlo l'shomran. So he's saying that it's one thing to say, let's say you had a tradition of people who converted at some point, many generations before, people did keep full halacha, and then at some point people stopped. But here, maybe what happened was, maybe our situation with the Ethiopian Jews is that they were originally non-Jewish, and then maybe there was a whole body of Jewish law that they never even kept to begin with, v'hi ekroni etzlam, and it's fundamental. So that's obviously an interesting question. What is considered fundamental? Like, how much of Jewish halacha do you have to accept for you to be considered to be Jewish, or you have to understand? So sharpa yesh l'hachzim mehashta al l'mafreya v'lomar midahashta him kofir mitzvus halol mekar namah hayu. So you can say if nowadays they don't accept, not their fault at all, they just never had a tradition. If now they don't accept nida, gittin, chalitza, they probably never accepted it. So then, kishenichtu legeirus nichtu adas kach. So when they accepted conversion, so they entered into conversion, you know, missing key elements of Judaism. V'yesh laharich bechazak kol hashta, and we probably should follow the presumption of now. Ve'im ken yeshli stopik. This is a sort of a summary. Shema eila shekiblu barishonu hayu psulim. And he says another issue. Forget about the Kabbalah Samitzvos. How do you even know that the first people, you needed a beis din to convert them, you need a court to convert them? A court of three people who were observant and who followed all of halacha. How do you know that the court, You know, assuming now, right, that they don't keep certain fundamental principles, so who's to say that the first people to convert them, you know, maybe we don't know one way or the other, but it's quite conceivable that the court that converted them were not necessarily observant or fully observant, because they never accept this. Because if you don't have a base, if you have a base in a psulim, a base of invalid, it's not considered you're not considered a convert. I feel nemar shenis kav basin shel shloshik sherim efshar de lo kibal lem ela mitzvos. So again, there are two different issues here. In other words, either you can say that the kabbalas mitzvos wasn't valid, or maybe the actual basin wasn't valid. Because again, if we're talking about that, what happened was there were some people that the locals were exposed to Jews, and they decided, oh, this is a good idea. We want to accept Judaism. So, in all likelihood, or it's quite conceivable that there were a bunch of that perhaps the people who converted them themselves may not have been fully observant, and then the Kabbalah Mitzvos may not have been there. So Rav Herzog is very concerned. He could not accept that Ethiopians were Jewish. He said there's a strong doubt. And Rav Herzog obviously wrote in an age of much more advances in social science. The nature and the form of human identity was being subjected to much more careful scrutiny. The claims that had been accepted perhaps in the 16th century during the time of the Radvaz as literally factual were obviously not being analyzed by critical historical methods. Right? So that's the question. Did they come from Jews or were they descended from converts? And were the converts invalid halachically? They were Safek Yehudim. They were doubtful Jews, said Rav Herzog, and they should undergo mikvah l'chumra. Maybe they should undergo some conversion practices. They could have been subject to some Judaic influence on certain tribes that adapted certain practices and customs. And many contemporary poskim were unwilling to say that they were Jews conclusively without the need for conversion. What's interesting is Rav Moshe Feinstein, again, he thinks of an in-between position. This is just a letter which he writes about this. And this is in 57, this is the translation of the letter. This is 5744. So that is about, that's about 40 years ago. Right? It's in the 1980s. It's actually after Rav Avadia. This is 5744. Right, so this is actually about 40 years ago. So he says, to be honored, he actually wrote even before this, but he said, this is a letter where he writes here, here as per your request, I affirm that what you wrote in my name several years ago regarding the Falashas, because he wrote before Rav Avad Yosef opined on this in the 1970s, but this is just a letter sort of found a translation stating his position that, you know, referring to the Radvaz, where he considers them to be Jews. However, for practical application of the law, it is difficult to rely on this, for it is not clear if the Radvaz knew well the reality regarding them, nor is it clear whether up until our time their status has remained the same and has not changed. So Moshe Feinstein, he raises two objections. Number one is, did the Radvaz use appropriate methods to evaluate whether they were Jewish? And number two is, maybe the facts have changed, he doesn't know. In regard to practical application of the law, they are not mamzerim, for the Radvaz mentions there are many doubts that apply to them. Review my responsa, where I detail at length the qualifications, the rabbinical prohibitions regarding the legal status of an illegitimate child of unknown fatherhood. Okay. Regarding their Judaism, we must consider it a suffix, and one must require of them true conversion before we permit them to marry within the Jewish community. And even before their conversion, is an active precept to save them from being drawn into a non-Jewish creed and from the danger, as the laws for any Jew, Safek Nefesh Lahakel, even when there is doubt, as in the very status of Jews. It's a fascinating position. Normally, we apply the idea of Safek Nefesh Lahakel, meaning what? That if you're not, let's say, someone may be in a life-threatening situation, so you should violate the Shabbos, right, to save someone, even violate the Shabbos, in order to save someone. What he's saying here is Safek Nefesh Lahakel. He's saying that we apply, since that they're possibly Jewish, they still have to convert out of doubt, but because the Safek, we have to save them, and we have to bring them to the Jewish, we have to bring them to Eretz Yisrael and convert them to Safek. In other words, don't say we don't care about them. We do care about them. We have to be makar of them. One should also know that even if in practical application of the law they are not Jews, since they think they are Jews, they sacrifice their lives for Judaism, we have to save them. As you mentioned, they should not be brought to the land of Israel unless they have undergone a conversion, so not to increase assimilation. But if they have legally converted, as I've heard they are all doing, we shall consider them like all Jews. We must assist them and support them for all needs of livelihood, both physically and spiritually. And he says, I've suffered great anguish because I have heard that there are those in Israel who are not drawing them close in spiritual matters and are causing they may be lost from Judaism. Seems to me these people are behaving so only because the color of the Falasha's skin is black. Right? He, in other words, Moshe is saying they're engaging in racism. It's obvious that one must draw them close, not only because they're no worse than the rest of the Jews, because there's no distinction of the law because they're black, but also because one can say they're a gerim and therefore they're included in the mitzvah, you should love the convert. And so Rav Moshe Feinstein takes the position a little more accommodating. He says he wants a gir l'chumra, he does want them to convert, but he thinks we should educate them, keep the mitzvahs misafek. And Rav Moshe Feinstein actually had beforehand. He actually signed a public letter with non-Orthodox rabbis calling for the immediate and rescue of Ethiopian Jews. Reb Soloveitchik also signed this letter, but interestingly enough, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, on this issue, he refused to sign. Because he felt he was very strong on certain issues. He took more of a hard-line stand, and this is one of them. The reason why the Ethiopian Jews were brought to Eretz Yisrael was because, among others, it was the spiritual leadership of Rav Ovadia Yosef. In 1973, he issued a ruling that basically changed the future of Ethiopian Jews. This is our final source, source 15. Again, I only have it in Hebrew. This is a summary. This is just a few passages of a much longer tshuva, and we'll try to read some of this. He says, number one, Be'inyane ole Ethiopia hafalashim. So everyone knows, this is from Chelech Ches, even Ezra Simon Yadav. Everyone knows what the Radvaz writes. And he says, everyone knows that they are from the tribe of Dan without any doubt. So he cites the Radvaz, right, what we read a little bit earlier, that they are like Tzadokun Baitos, they're like Tinuk Shenishba, and they are real Jews. I already said my opinion, this is 1973. That the Beta Israel community are Jews according to, with respect to every perspective, with respect to everything. V'istamachti al Radvaz v'hamarikash. He says to the Radvaz, another Achron the Marikash. V'gama tzanu l'kama gonim b'dor shel fanei shkimu kviyazu. He says to other great rabbis who agreed to this. L'chein basi l'maskana shefalashim et tzatzaim l'shevet m'Yisrael shehidrimu l'kush. I believe that they are descendants from that went down south to Kush, to Ethiopia, the Ankle, Savik, Shagonim, Hanal, Shakavu, Shahemi, Shevadam, Chakru, Vidarshi, Vikila, Maskana, Zuapi, Adios, Varias, Mahamnos, Bioser. Says Ravadi Yosef, there's no doubt in my mind that the great rabbis, like the Radvaz, who established that they are from Shevadan, that they investigated and came to the conclusion based on testimony and their own proofs, and that this is true. And after it was requested from the leaders of the Beta Israel community that they said that they want to follow what the Jewish people do in the spirit of Torah and Halacha, Torah Shavuot, Torah Shavuot, without any fences, and it's follow exactly without any boundaries, without any divisions. And to observe all the mitzvos. He said, we want to accept Torah and Halacha. It's not a time to be silent. We need to save them from assimilation. To facilitate their aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. And to educate them in the spirit of our Torah, the Holy Torah. And to join them in a building of our holy land, Vishavu Barim Livulam, that the children should return to their borders. Laura now paniti la mamshela, mamshela no sochlut hayudit, and therefore I turned to the governorate and the Jewish agency. L'chol yigunim b'Yisrael tfutzot ha'golala sota kol la'alotam la'Eretz Yisrael. I want to do everything I can, turn to all agencies to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. L'vilti yidrach mimenu didach, so they shouldn't be pushed aside. Ule chancham bavate sefer datim v'al talmud Torah, to bring them to religious schools, ladad chachmo musa lahavid imre bina, and so right, so that's what he wants. And if you look at the next paragraph, he says ulam lo achached, I'm not going to deny. Ki ra'isi lahagon Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog mechtavo miyom chavtes adar alef tav shin yud dalit. I'm not going to deny that there was a letter from Rav Herzog, dated 5714, so that's 1954, I believe, right? 1954. Lemachlaka Tarbut Toranit Lagola Shaydi Asokhnut Yehudit that was sent to the Jewish agency. Shikatala Pakpek Bialutam Shel HaPalashim Vimne Shira Shachokrim Manui Vigamur Imam Shafalashim Haim Bene Geza Lo Yehudi Shinit Kairu Epam. That basically he wanted to challenge the Jewish identity of the Beta Israel community because he saw that the academics, the researchers, basically took the view that they come from a race that's not Jewish, that they concluded that they come from a non-Jewish race that converted at some point. And it's clear they did not convert on condition to observe our Judaism according to Torah Shabbat Peh, Ela Yadut Shabbat Milibam, but only Judaism that they thought from their own heart. Vedidim commission is Gaia Manas Lishmor Kola Torah Chutz Midiktuk Achat Midivrei Sofrim. The halacha is that if you convert on condition that you're going to observe the entire Torah except from one rabbinic law, in Makabim Mosul, we don't accept him. Ve'im Kain, if that's the case, Shema Em Yehudim Vemuvan Hilchati, so maybe they're not really halachically Jewish. Venora Osni Flesi Mara Kachalit Chos Divrei Gonim Olam Shikovim. And he says that I was beside myself. How could someone override the words of great rabbinic leaders that establish with certainty that there is absolutely no doubt that they come from the tribe of Dan? They are overriding. He's overriding the words of great rabbinic leaders from hundreds of years ago and even less, based on some researchers who, claim some doubt of their Judaism. Umi nidchem ibnei ni. Let me ask you a question. You have the scholars and you have great rabbinic leaders. Who do we push off from whom? Et maha. I am like beside myself. Umi kol makon. Heyo chirishi shosa maitze v'tziva l'rav nosim salam shi'itzarif mo shnitam nechamim v'yazu atavaz dam b'ris u'tvila l'shem gir l'chumra. I saw that they said, okay, just bring them and let them do, they already had a circumcision. So just take a drop of blood and let them go to the mikvah and do what's called gir lechumra, do a conversion as a stringency. In other words, you're not saying they're not Jewish, but just as a stringency. There were just tens of Ethiopians who came in bit by bit. So v'loy b'yashumit nagula tavad dam b'ritu v'tfilah, and they didn't oppose doing this, lo ratzit lachloka lemaisa al Rav Herzog. So he didn't want to cause a machlokas because wasn't a big deal. Just do the geris lachumra. The Ethiopian Jews who were coming initially were not offended. So what's the problem? V'marti miot tov al tikvara. You want to be good, don't be bad. In other words, don't make a big fight. No one's fighting, so it's fine. Ulam l'dina lo kain anochi madi. But I don't agree with that. I think they don't even need gear l'chumra. And then he writes, Halom, Shamati Shikon Rav Moshe Feinstein, Kaza Michtel Rav Moshe Tendler. And I saw that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a letter to Rav Tendler on Tav Shin Mem Dalet. So that was, that was this letter, 1984. Kilo baro imaradvaz yadahetim and some seers of the sun. Moshe said, "We don't know." He's Moshe questioned the radvaz. Said, "Umama od yesi tmod var meilu meachar shiadua lachol gdulaso shel radvaz." He says, "I don't know. I mean, he knows where Moshe finds his greatness, but I'm not sure. I have to wonder about his opinion. It's known. Everyone knows the greatness of the radvaz. The next of the posted gadol gambedor dor dea." And he says, everyone knew the Radvaz is like one of the Gedolei Hador of the 16th century. He wasn't a nobody. And he was considered, this was a prominent generation. This was the generation of Yosef Cairo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. This is a very well-regarded generation full of Torah scholars. And he was a well-regarded posek. He issued his psak. Nobody argued on him. So he finds it very difficult. The Moshe Feinstein is going to argue on him. So again, Ramosha fine, but this is again a later tshuva, but it was in 1973 that he ruled in favor of the Ethiopian Jews being Jews. He rejects the researchers' claims. He feels very strongly about the inherent strength of the legal traditions established by the great sages of old, the clear existential commitment of the Beta Israel to their Jewishness, as evidenced by their ongoing tradition of martyrdom and self-sacrifice. Ethiopian Jews zealously have guarded their Jewish identity throughout the generations, even going to the extreme of requiring community members who even spoke to non-Jews to immerse in the river. Like they were very machbit about their Jewish tradition. So since 1954, the chief rabbinate required, as it was seemed to indicate by this tshuva, since 1954, the chief rabbinate required Ethiopian Jews to undergo some form of formal conversion procedure. Rav Yosef, as mentioned in his tshuva, he opposed this ruling, but he did not oppose it as the chief rabbi. Now, the Ethiopian Jews were very pained at what seemed to be a denial of Jewish identity that they had fought so hard to preserve, and they had a public protest against the chief rabbinate's position in 1985. Now, because of Rav Yosef's ruling in 1975, the Israeli Knesset decided that the law of return applies to Ethiopian Jewry. And again, so that means that they don't need immigration permits or visas. In 1977, the Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin instructed the heads of the Israel Security Agency and the Mossad, said, "Bring me the Ethiopian Jews." The Mossad strikes a deal with the Ethiopian dictator, Arms for Jews. The first 120 Jews reach Israel. By 1984, 8,000 Jews have been brought to Israel by sea and by air. And then Israel launches Operation Moses in 1984. We have 6,000 Jews are brought to Israel. That's where you have, as mentioned, this protest, and you have a lot of Ethiopian Jews now really feeling offended that they're required to convert, even L'chumra, that their Judaism is being challenged. Meanwhile, Operation Solomon is launched in 1991, and there 15,000 Jews are brought to Israel from Addis Ababa in exchange for $35 million. It should be noted that when the press made the secret operation public in 1984, the Sudanese government, which was allied with the Arab nations, stopped the airlifts, and that's why it did not resume until 1991, after there was two things happened. Number one, there was a regime change, and number two, there was a $34 million bribe. Now, it should be noted that even though Rav Avad Yosef considered the Radvaz's position to be conclusive regarding the status of Ethiopian Jews, the Ministry of Absorption report stated that from an ethnic and cultural perspective, they are an organic part of the Ethiopian people. In other words, they did not believe that the Ethiopians were Jewish. By the way, the word falasha actually means outsider. So many Ethiopians who came to Israel converted to satisfy all opinions that they are Jewish. But for those who don't, you have a debate. Rav Avadia Yosef felt that they are Jewish, and other poskim like Moshe Feinstein felt that it was a doubt. There was a rabbi actually who came to Young Israel of Oceanside. This must have been 14, 15 years ago, I think, Rav Sharon Shalom. He's an Ethiopian rabbi who wrote a book about his experience coming to Israel. And he wrote that he attended Yeshiva at Har Etzion, that's the Gush, and Rav Amital told him to go to the mikvah just that there would be no questions for shiduchim purposes. He said, just practically, you might as well just do it. Some recent DNA studies have shown, again, that the genetic the genetic material of Beta Israel was much closer to Ethiopian non-Jewish populations, and this would be consistent with the theory that they are descendants of the ancient inhabitants of Ethiopia, not Middle East. But the truth is, there's a divergence of opinion among scholars. Not to say that all scholars say that they're not, that they came from converts. Some scholars take the view that they do have an ancient Jewish origin, while some argue that they came from converts. The reason why I spoke about this a few years ago is that Barkan Winery a few years ago, this is a wine manufacturing company in Israel, reassigned several employees of Ethiopian origin to different jobs at the request of the Badat, Eidei HaCharedit organization. The Badat Eidei HaCharedit, I'm sorry, hold on, I don't know what happened here. One second. We're finished anyway with the sources, so I'm going to, you can hold on. The Badat Eidei HaCharedit organization that certified the Barkat and otherwise had questioned whether the workers in question are Jewish. And if they're not Jewish, are they allowed to handle certain, you know, not certain kosher wine? And after these discriminatory practices were made public and Barkan wineries received so much negative publicity, the company announced that its Ethiopian workers would return to work essentially on the kosher wines. And in fact, what happened was, following this decision, the Eidei HaCharedit, a kashrut authority, removed the winery's kosher supervision from non-mavushal wines. Now, our issue is what's behind the Barkan winery controversy when the Eidei HaCharedit did not follow the ruling of Rav Avadya Yosef, and they could not give the hashgacha to the winery because, according to them, the Ethiopians were not Jewish. And of course, the issue of the Falash Mura further complicates the issue. In 2002, Rav Avadya Yosef actually declared that this group of Ethiopians had converted out of fear and persecution, and they should be considered Jews. That being said, the country is divided. The country in Israel was divided about this, because if you remember from the last session of Law of Return, said that basically any Jew is automatically subject to Law of Return unless he converts to Christianity, or unless he converts to a different religion. So even if someone halachically is Jewish, they might not be Jewish according to the Law of Return. So in 2003, the Israeli government applied Resolution 2958 to the Falash Mura, which granted maternal descendants of Beta Israel the right to make aliyah to Israel under the Law of Return and to obtain citizenship if they convert to Judaism. So again, this is different than the rest of the Beta Israel community, that the rest of the Beta Israel community need not convert under the Law of Return, but the Falash Mura need to convert. One way to understand this controversy is that it may pit our modern moral sensibilities against halachic logic. Our modern tendency is that if someone identifies as, if I identify as something, then we should respect that identity. If someone identifies as being Jewish, we would like to try to respect that identity. But what if, according to halachic logic, the arguments supporting that person's claim are weak? Then what should we do? That's the issue in general when it comes to the Law of Return. What if someone identifies as being Jewish? And you can identify all you want, but we don't think you're Jewish. So what should we do? But perhaps there's another issue, which, especially with Ethiopian Jews, is that there are two competing modern values here. There's the modern value of inclusion, of respecting someone's personal decision to identify with a particular race, nation, and religion, versus the modern academic scholarship, which may reject any real connection between Ethiopians who claim they are Jewish and real Jewish roots. So it's very fascinating. A lot of different issues are interwoven in this issue. And I think as time goes on, I guess this is less of an issue. I think, you know, the Russian issue is probably a graver issue in terms of the status of Jewishness, because there you have, you know, no halachic authority. You have no halachic authority to say that every Russian who comes to Israel is definitely Jewish. You have many Russians who are not, who claim, you know, that they're Jewish because of their father and they're living in Israel. So that provides a much more challenging assimilation problem for the Jews in the state of Israel. Whereas for the Ethiopians, you know, you have obviously a giantly Rav Avadya Yosef who paskin this way, notwithstanding that there's some disagreements, but you have that position. And of course, I'm not even touching on the issue of racism, which is obviously a broader issue unto itself. But this is in a nutshell, you know, what's going on with Ethiopian Jews, and it's even relevant, we see from, you know, the article from yesterday, trying to get the rest of the Ethiopian Jews out of Ethiopia into Israel, including the Falash Mura, which presents even additional challenges. I'll be happy to